book of tea on organ with his MGs with green onions. This was a tune that he wrote as a teenager in high school, and it became an iconic sound during the 60s. And even now, people hear it and it takes them right back to the old days. This is Lead Stories. I'm Patrice Lead, and today we're talking about foundation rot. It's a disease that afflicts people, particular kinds of people, in the foundation world. And upon close inspection, as we'll hear today, you find that you will encounter the evidence of foundation rot. The Clintons are afflicted with it, and we will learn that the former president, Barack Obama, has apparently the same disease. But before we get into it, I'd like to introduce you to our guest today, who is no stranger to this program. He's Charles Ortel, who had brought down, if you will, a number of corporations by looking forensically at the books. He's a Wall Street, a retired Wall Street banker, and he is now considered an expert on charity fraud, having taken a look, self-initiated, into a number of organizations and so-called foundations, finding gross abuse of the law. And recently, several months ago actually, Charles launched his own program, and it is called Sunday with Charles. You can see it. You should check it out. It is, I will tell you up front, it is a long program, but the interesting thing is he is building an audience. And some things that you think would be boring, you know, who wants to discuss figures and numbers and all this other kind of stuff? But he has grown an appreciable audience over these last few months. Charles, welcome today to Lead Stories, your old stomping ground.
Thanks so much, Patrice, for bringing me back on. It's always a pleasure.
Yes. Tell us a bit. Just a little bit more about Sunday with Charles, and then let's get into our topic today.
Thank you for that. Yeah, actually, I teamed up with a Hollywood veteran, Jason Goodman, who is an NYU film school graduate, and he really came up with this formula wherein we take principally a movie, but also sometimes a song or a book, and we slightly change the title. And we then go ahead and we give our viewers a different sort of podcast that's made possible by the internet and YouTube and actually Twitter and other means, where we talk in great depth, but we provide our audience with links to source materials. So it's not just our opinion. You get a chance to see how we came up with this analysis. And actually, we just did our, I think it was our 104th two-hour show. And we're getting, thanks to you, Patrice, and your audience, we're getting quite a lot of engaged viewers who also interact with us in the comment section and by email and other ways and provide very useful information. So we're trying to do something in the 21st century that really wasn't possible in the traditional media format.
Well, again, congratulations, and I know your audience is growing and they're appreciating the work that you do, as we have here. What is it now? We almost 3 years into this thing.
Yeah, I should get a degree out of this. An academic degree. Maybe you could give me a master's in communications from Leeds University.
Well, what's happening today in Chicago is that Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the Chicago City Council are being forced to explain a number of extraordinary incentives the city seemed almost certain to agree to in laying out the red carpet for the planned Obama presidential complex. Outraged Chicagoans, however, say the sprawling complex, a project of the Obama Foundation, has already taken on the stench of corrupt Chicago-style politics. Right. What say you?
Yeah, I should disclose that my great-grandfather was actually born in Chicago, and I met him for the first time when he was 101. His first memory was the Chicago Fire of 1869, and or whenever it was, 18-something or other. And fortunately, he got out of Chicago by about 1890. And you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, that place, I suppose New York is not much better, and maybe D.C. is not much better, and parts of California. But Chicago in particular has, you know, long been famous for using taxpayer money to private benefit. And it's a bipartisan thing. It's not simply Democrats doing it or Republicans doing it. Unfortunately, everybody seems to do it. And there are lots of former Illinois politicians who are in prison for this type of corruption. And when I think back to my first introduction to Barack Obama, when I think 2 years into my retirement, I heard him give that famous speech on television in 2000, I think it was four, when he was really at that point an unheralded state senator from Illinois. And a lot of people wondered, you know, why in the heck is he getting such, you know, amount of visibility at the Democrat National Convention? And I had never really heard much about him, so I thought, you know, I want to listen to this guy. And I was mesmerized, frankly. I thought it was one of the, I still say it's one of the best political speeches in modern history. Unfortunately, it's turned out, I think, in retrospect, to be mostly hot air. He articulated some wonderful ideas, an America of people joining together by, you know, our love for this country and, you know, putting party differences aside to actually deliver on the American dream for as much of the country as possible. That's what, you know, in a nutshell, his speech sounded like to me. And so, when I think about what's going on with this foundation in the heels of the Clinton Foundation, as it turns out, our viewers, our listeners, your listeners know well that foundations can be abused when they're not following the strict rules that do apply. So, for example, the Obama Foundation, like the Clinton Foundation, is not a private foundation in the sense that it's, you know, rich people getting together like the Gates or whatever and putting a pile of money into an entity and then doling that money out over time to other charities. That's not what this is supposed to be. By law, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but I know how to read. By law, a public charity, which is what the Obama Foundation is, what the Clinton Foundation is, must be controlled by an independent board. That is to say, it can't be only Obama partisans, only Clinton partisans, or for that matter, only Bush partisans, Republicans, that sit on top of the entity that is supposed to house the presidential records of a presidency. It can't be like that. It's got to be neutral. It's got to be a place where scholars and others who want to know more about the presidency can travel and sit in a room and look at this property, which is the property of we the people. The presidential records, it's a defined term under the Presidential Records Act of 1978. It's actually pretty well thought through, even though it was well before people used what became the Internet. It very specifically defines what are presidential records, what are not presidential records, and it makes clear that these libraries are supposed to house not some of the presidential records, all of the presidential records, all of the records created or received during the term of a given president. And in addition, you can't mix the purposes of a presidential foundation with anything that might be a means of, let's say, promoting a dynastic political family. And here I'm thinking, you know, Bill Clinton had his presidential foundation, and then I think April 8th or 9th, 2013, suddenly it became known as the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, which I would argue is strictly against the law. That foundation was not set up in October 1997 and did not receive its federal tax exemption in January 1998 because it was supposed to embellish for all time whatever suited the fancy and interests of the wider Clinton family. That is not the purposes, the purpose for which that thing was set up. And in a similar fashion, this Barack Obama Foundation, I just actually was refreshing my recollection so that I could be detail-oriented today with you, was established on January 31st, 2014. And it was established in Washington, D.C., at a time when, of course, Barack Obama and Democrats, well, Barack Obama was president and his people controlled the IRS, I would argue, in the Justice Department. And, of course, Washington, D.C. has long been a Democrat stronghold. So it was established at a time where I would argue the application was not stress tested. And the purposes for which the foundation was established were, in my mind, way too general. According to the IRS guidelines and precedents, you could set up a not-for-profit corporation under Washington, D.C. law, but when you want to get that federal tax exemption, you have to tighten up its purposes. They have to be very specific. And in this case, I think there were four different things. It was educational, charitable, scientific, and religious, of all things, purposes, with no specific statement in the Articles of Incorporation, which, by the way, have only been amended once. They were amended to change the name from, I think it was Barack H. Foundation, Barack H. Obama Foundation, to now the Barack Obama Foundation. They've never amended their purpose section to be as specific as they need to be. Now, that said, what they did in, I think it was June or July of 2014, is they put in an application under to the IRS on Form 1023. Now, I bring that up because it's a very specific, lengthy, detailed application submitted under penalties of perjury, in which the people who filed it expanded their explanation and made clear that what they wanted to do here was comply with the Presidential Libraries Act of 1955, as amended in 1986, to set up, using private money, a facility in Chicago that would house the presidential records created or received during the Barack Obama presidency. That's crystal clear in that application. And in the guidelines for charities, they're voluminous guidelines, they make clear that you get your federal tax exemption in what's called a determination letter, not to do anything you might want to do when you wake up in the morning, but to do what you say you're going to do, actually say you're going to do in writing under penalties of perjury in the application. So it's clear that they got the federal tax exemption for that purpose. Then they went ahead and they filed an annual report to the IRS for 2014 and 15, for 2015 and 16, and for 2016 and 17. In the initial IRS application, it was clear that the projects that were going to be pursued were projects that were to represent the interests of Barack Obama. It did not say Barack and Michelle. It did not say the Obama family. It did not say the Obama wing of the Democratic Party. It said it was to comply, principally to comply with these acts concerning the presidential library, and secondarily to get involved promoting projects that were shared the values of Barack Obama alone. Then in the 990s, when they started talking about their mission, They changed it. In 2000, I think the first one that was done in 2014 and 15, they tried to expand it to say the projects would reflect the values of Barack and Michelle. And now, you know, that's in theory fine and nice, but in practice, you know, Barack Obama himself, particularly during the tense 2015 and 2016 period, went out of his way to say that Michelle Obama is an excellent potential presidential candidate. And, you know, what I object to with this Clinton Foundation and, frankly, with the Bush Foundations, when you have these families that have dynastic political interests, they should not be involved, in my opinion. They certainly should not control entities like these foundations, which are subsidized by federal and also state taxpayers, if they're done according with state laws as well, you should not be allowed to operate that unchecked, because we all know that these presidential families have gigantic egos. No one's going to cross, no friend of the Clintons is going to cross the Clintons in a foundation, and nor for the Bushes or the Reagans or you name it. It's just not going to happen. So these foundations need to have independent boards, and they don't. And, you know, while Barack was still president, they filed multiple reports with the IRS and with various states saying, yeah, we're going to comply with the National Archives and Records guidelines and with the Presidential Libraries Act of 1986. Then, out of the blue, after Barack Obama left, I just checked this, on May 3rd, 2017, the National Archives announced, actually what's going to happen here is that the Barack Obama Foundation is going to pay to digitize some of the records, the unclassified records, but all the records of the Barack Obama presidency, the two terms, will be housed at the expense of the National Archives. Well, that's a radically different plan than was the basis for them getting the federal tax exemption in June-July timeframe 2014. Why is that? The idea was, with this Presidential Libraries Act, that you would give these foundations tax exemption because you were lessening the cost of government. Private donors were going out, instead of the National Archives building and heating and paying for, you know, the administration of these facilities that house the gigantic troves of records, private donors would go do that. And moreover, private donors would go and raise an endowment that would be a cash endowment that would be, in the case of the Barack Obama Foundation, 60% of the cost of constructing the facility. So they peremptorily changed the essential benefit of the bargain between the foundation and we the people on May 3rd, 2017, at a time when the National Archives were likely still controlled by Obama-era holdovers. So I would argue just that change alone, in my mind, guts the tax-exempt status of the Barack H. Obama Foundation. And then when you layer on top of that, the idea that, you know, all the public statements that have been made that, you know, Barack Obama aims to train 1 million people just like him in the foundation, and he's going to go around the world and have all these international operations, none of that was contemplated in the application that was approved while Barack Obama was still president. Now, you know, I'm not somebody, while I really think that many of the economic programs that Barack Obama instituted were atrocious, I'm actually somebody who believes that his presidency is so important and so historic that I took the trouble to contact the Barack Obama Foundation. I said, listen, don't make the mistake that the Clintons have made here. You know, you want to set up, you've got to amend your articles of incorporation. If you want to expand your purposes and do all this international work, make sure you do that. And, of course, they didn't listen. I just checked this morning, and they have not amended their articles of incorporation the way they need to do. So, sadly, particularly given where I believe ongoing investigations are in the Clinton Foundation, I think this thing is set up to fail. And now we learn that a Republican in the governor in Illinois has apparently seen his way clear to send $350 million towards this Barack Obama Foundation. Now, Illinois is in a horrible financial position. Chicago also is in a horrible financial position. They do not have $350 million extra dollars lying around for this project. And I don't think they can do it to support an entity that is basically going to be deemed, I believe, not to be a foundation, instead to be a for-profit partisan political activity. You know, I think this is a very grave mistake. I understand why it would happen in Chicago, given, you know, the power of the machine, the importance of the Obama family to that machine, the fact that, you know, people might believe that redistricting or changing the purpose of this area in South Side Chicago would bring more tourism and economic development here. I understand all that. But, you know, what I see here is a disaster. And it's really sad to see, because I'd like to see, you know, neutral, in-depth investigation of what truly happened when Barack Obama was president. On that score, I understand that access to his records will not even be made available to the public until 12 years after he left. So I mean, for a lot of reasons, I think this is in a horrible shape now. And, you know, I guess the folks on the board just believe they can do whatever they want to do.
Well, this is the interesting thing. People in Chicago, regular citizens of Chicago, other people who are more sophisticated in the way of how government works, they're the ones who raised the alarm and forced this meeting to refine or to get a more definitive idea of what exactly is the Obama Library about. What we're learning is that it isn't a single building. It is a complex of different buildings that are doing different things, presumably related to the central concept of an Obama Library, but having entirely different thrusts, entirely different focuses. So that is one issue. But then what really drove this thing over the edge was when the people of Chicago got to learn that the foundation will pay the city only $10. $10. For a 99-year lease for 19.3 acres of land on which to build the so-called library. Now, have you ever heard of a $10 fee covering 99 years of permission to use city land?
Well, I think even Peter Stuyvesant did a better deal for the resident, I don't like to call them Indians, but natives here on the island of Manhattan back in the 1600s. I think he probably gave them more value for the land that he took. No, I think this is, you know, it's absurd. I mean, if you want to do a deal like this, I go to base principles and I say, all right, who are the parties to the deal? You know, let's say it is indeed the city of Chicago is one party with the land. Who are you contracting with? If you're contracting with the Barack H. Obama or the Barack Obama Foundation, you should establish whether or not that foundation is indeed a public charity lawfully organized and operated, which I submit it is not. So then it becomes a highly questionable deal. Why are you giving, you know, an entity that's going to be collapsed, in my view, into just a loose association of private and political interests? Why are you giving the benefit of use of prime city property for $10, which is really just a nominal payment, for 99 years? It's a bribe.
I've never heard anything like that. And it so happens that the land that he will be getting, or I should say the foundation will be getting for its various related projects, it's not just city land, but it is prime city land, and Chicagoans are very upset about it because it is lakeside, it is just prime property, and there is no justification for the city other than, of course, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of the city, was a chief of staff for Barack Obama, and up comes this $10 for 99 years deal, which is, I mean, it's on its face is just so insulting and so wrong and so exceedingly rare that you wonder, how could Barack Obama, a person who is a lawyer, he was president of the United States, it should have occurred to him, even if other people associated with him, let's say, arranged this deal. As a former president, you don't want that to be attached to your name. It is absolutely wrong. It is absolutely, it's tantamount to being illegal, in my view. But right, well, it's
so
going along.
So one comparable that they probably are thinking about that I know off the top of my head is that in Little Rock, then called the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation, agreed, entered into a bargain where they agreed to source $100 million, and actually, not simply, they estimated it at 100, but whatever it might cost to build the facilities that were to be known as the Clinton Presidential Library and the Clinton School of Public Service, at the expense of what was supposed to be this validly organized and operated public charity, which I submit it isn't. In exchange for sourcing that $100 million back in, the agreement was struck March 1st, 2002, so $100 million was even more substantial back then than it is today, the city of Little Rock said, we'll give you, actually, I think it was like a 100-year lease with at least one, if not two, extensions. So you could point to that as a potential comparable, but you would have to then say to the city of Chicago, okay, you know, how much capital from private sources now, not from the state of Illinois, not from other guys, how much private capital is going to go in to create this complex? What assurances do you have, City of Chicago, that the people operating the Barack Obama Foundation are going to make sure that it is not just a public charity, but a specific type of public charity, which is meant to house this kind of library and research center? And what assurances do you have of all that? And, you know, once you get all that, you could think about doing this, but I don't think, you know, I think the Clinton case shows just how dangerous it is to do these bad deals that nobody checks. And, you know, at least the Clintons made more of a pretense in the early days of trying to operate within the letter of the law. But this thing, I think, went badly off course by May 3rd, 2017. This is, in my view, and again, I'm not a lawyer, this does not comply with applicable federal laws concerning a presidential library. It just simply does not. There may be some crony-level agreement struck in the dead of night between, you know, friends of the Obamas and the National Archives and elsewhere and the IRS, but this does not pass the smell test. And the problem with this is it's not like when you do something in the guise of a foundation that you get a blank check for the rest of your life to do whatever you want. You know, if Donald Trump's new IRS guy puts in a new team at the IRS and they decide, as I think they should, to bring laws that apply to private foundations and public charities to date, the last time they were amended for this broad area was 1969. So if they decide to modernize the laws to recognize, you know, the many differences that have happened since 69 and the abuses that have happened, particularly those at the Clinton Foundation, I would argue that this thing is always going to be vulnerable. And, you know, they're talking about big construction plans, big amounts of money. You know, do you really want to get involved with something like that and take the risk that, you know, let's say if Donald Trump and the Republicans do not suffer defeats in 2008, in November, as badly as some expect? And, you know, for those who, I'm sorry for your listeners for saying this, but, you know, if by some miracle, Donald Trump not only wins in 2020, but increases his majorities in the House and the Senate, do the people in Chicago and Illinois really believe that this type of charity fraud will be tolerated? I don't think so.
It is, in fact, a legalized land grab. This is like almost 20 acres of prime public land that the foundation will be getting for $10 for 99 years. I mean, what could possibly be the solution here, you think? How do you look at this matter in more finite detail to find out who did what and for what reason?
Well, so I think, you know, unfortunately, when you look at you know, the laws and the regulations and the precedents, when a public charity such as the Barack Obama Foundation fails either the organizational or operational test, it is deemed not to be actually a foundation, and so it's legally at peril. So I warned these people last year. I said, look, I think you're already in trouble, and I certainly wouldn't do anything to complicate your troubles. They did not listen to me. It's just fine. But I think the existing foundation should be shut down, and penalties should be paid because they've only raised I think less than $25 million all in. It would, you know, be hurt, but it wouldn't be a disaster. And then if you want to set this thing up not to be in compliance with the National Archive requirements and the Presidential Libraries Act, if that's what you want to do, file a new application, get it approved, and operate tightly in compliance with applicable laws and regulations, not simply federal, but state and local. And make sure that you have, if this is the way you want to do it, make sure that you have a board of trustees that is actually independent, that includes apolitical people, Republicans, Democrats. If this is what you want to do in the guise of a charity, you got to go through and get that done correctly. On the other hand, if you want to just create a machine, you know, a new political party, for example, or a wing of the Democratic Party, go down that route and organize it as a nakedly partisan political idea and comply with those laws. Or if you want to create something that's to make the Obamas even richer than they already are, set up a private company, for-profit company, and abandon this pretense of it being a charity. But don't.
To your mind, has a crime been committed here?
Yes. Yes. I think what you have are you begin with the question of whether it's charity solicitation fraud in multiple states, and I would argue it probably is. You then get into the issue if you're using the mails, you're using electronic commerce, or a whole bunch of statutes that deal with deceptive fundraising practices, you're probably in violation of those. Then you get into the question of, you know, is this like, in my view, the Clinton Foundation, is this a way to curry favor with somebody who might well actually be the best candidate to succeed, or you know, the best Democratic contender in 2020, Michelle Obama? Is that what this is? Just like the Clinton Foundation became in 2013. You pay small money to this charity, and suddenly you're on, you know, small money from the standpoint of being a billionaire, and suddenly you're on the right side of the next president of the United States who could run the country for 8 years if Michelle wins. I think you're probably, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think this reeks. I mean, it's not as bad as the Clinton Foundation yet, because the Clinton Foundation has had a lot longer to, in quotes, live, and has solicited, has received $3 billion or thereabouts so far over the life of the Presidential Foundation to build a facility which they claim cost only $160 million, and I don't even think they spent that much on it. So it's not as bad as that, but, you know, left to its own devices, it could get a lot worse.
Speaking of the murky world of politically connected foundations, what's the update that you have on the Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation? What's the latest word on these various probes that are ongoing, not just in the United States, but also globally? You have several prosecutorial entities looking at the foundation. What's the latest that you have?
Sure. So what we know from it being in the public domain is that the IRS commenced an investigation into the Clinton Foundation under the prior administration, the Obama administration, by July 2016. We also learned a number of weeks or months ago that the FBI commenced an investigation into the Clinton Foundation in January of 2016. So there are mature investigations that we know about at federal level. We learned recently that from various sources that a number of states have been looking at this for a while. Here, New York State is one of the states, I believe. And the issue, of course, in New York State is that the prior attorney general, before he was squeezed out of office, Schneiderman, for his abhorrent behavior, had opened an aggressive investigation into the Trump Foundation. And it, you know, frankly, may have found infractions. But the Trump Foundation, I'm a numbers guy, and so I like to focus first on the biggest problems. Trump, we're talking $20 million. Clinton, we're talking $3 billion. And Obama, we're talking $25 million at present. So that's why I've been focused on the Clintons. But so the New York State people have been pushed very hard to look, because they made a lot of aggressive public statements about the Trump investigation, going, you know, some candidates in the recent primary bragging about how aggressive they were going to be against Donald Trump, saying he's a criminal, blah, 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 trying his case in advertisements of public domain, which you're not supposed to do. Anyway, states like New York, high-tax states, are looking hard at this. And if you go in the public domain, you'll see that even in California, Governor Moonbeam state, you check on the Clinton Health Access status of their reporting, and it says that their latest filings, that's the biggest piece of the Clinton Foundation, were rejected in the state of California for the year 2016. That's pretty serious stuff. Then you go check Clinton Health Access up in Washington State, where, you know, the largest private foundation, I think one of them in the world, the Gates Foundation, is based there. The state of Washington, according to their website, involuntarily closed the Clinton Foundation's operation in Washington State, I think in 2017. So you're starting to see, you know, multiple U.S. states pick up on all the chatter and noise and problems in the Clinton Foundation. And then internationally, people have been waiting. You know, they've been, from what I could tell, governments up really through the election itself were loath to get in line to start jousting with President Hillary or Clinton. Because you look back at the Clinton record when Bill was president, they didn't really take all that kindly that people challenged them. So many of these foreign governments just, you know, were biting their lips and not doing anything. And then they watched as, I'm just characterizing what I think happened, they watched as the resistance took hold, you know, that people threatened to, you know, maybe make it impossible for Donald Trump to be inaugurated. Then the Mueller thing happened. So a number of these foreign parties have been loath to actually take the lead in challenging the Clinton Foundation. All that has changed now. In recent weeks, last week or so, Donald Trump's nominee to head the IRS, a lawyer from Beverly Hills, tax lawyer, was finally confirmed after months of delays as head of the IRS. He will now most likely, you know, shake things up at the IRS. We see the drama that's going on in the Department of Justice. It's now crystal clear that there are, you know, active resistors, I think at senior level, and then, you know, throughout the vast bureaucracy of some 100,000 people in the Department of Justice, I think. It's a gigantic number. You know, it's taking time here, and as that time passes, governments, I can say that the province of Ontario is actively looking very hard at this, and that is now led by a conservative, meaning that not the party that Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, is in. And so these people in Ontario who have been gigantic donors, where the Clinton Foundation is in fact registered, the government up there is actively looking at this. Government of France is actively looking at this. Government of Norway is being teed up to look at it. Australia, New Zealand. I received word through a reliable source that the UK is looking at it. The European Parliament is looking at it. And we have all these leaders and heads of state converging on New York next week, where I believe there may be some more news. I should say I hope to make some news next week when all these people are here in our city, kind of bringing people up to date in specific terms, just how large this fraud is and how indefensible it is for regulators to say, we didn't notice nothing. We didn't see anything. And it's just so obvious.
I don't know nothing.
and are we so rich? I mean, around the world, interest rates are going up, which is bad news for people who aren't prepared for it, and especially for leveraged companies and leveraged governments. Are the governments of the world so rich that they don't care about getting money back from a fraudulent set of charities? And I think the answer is no, they're not so rich. They're hurt.
But, you know, it just doesn't compute that the principles of a foundation under the gun for allegedly fraudulent behavior should be still out soliciting funds and acting as if nothing is going on. Is that, in fact, the whole ploy, to act as if nothing is going on? Or is there evidence that they're frazzled by this and trying to, decide how to cut and run?
Yeah, I think this is a case, I don't think of the world in political terms. I'm somebody who's happily retired, and if I think of the world in terms of any kind, it has to do with economics and numbers. Clintons don't think that way. And particularly the disciples of the Alinskyites, they don't care about laws or regulations. They understand that the elected partisans and the bureaucracies that get entrenched, they decide what laws get enforced and how they get prosecuted. They can let friends off. They can punish enemies. And so, I hope I don't get in too much of trouble for this, but I think it was David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. I think there's a famous quote, "The law is a ass."
And the law is a ass. Yes, indeed.
And I think that, that's the way the Clintons and the Obamas and others, and frankly, people in the parts of the Republican Party as well, that's the way they think. We're going to control the levers of power. We'll decide what the Constitution means, what the laws say, et cetera. So if you're going to go down that route and decide that laws don't matter and that you're just going to play to win political campaigns, you better win. And they didn't. So I think, the what are those stages when you have loss, it's anger, denial, I don't think they're in the resignation mode yet. They honestly believe, the Clintons and their backers, and perhaps the Obamas, that they can get the better of Donald Trump. And, that they can actually, they're holding out to the hope that they're going to win in the midterms and maybe gain control of the House at minimum, and in so doing, stop all these investigations and start, maybe impeaching Donald Trump. So they're still believing, in good things under the Christmas tree, following the election. I think that's unwise. And what I believe may be happening, it's one thing to run around as Hillary and Bill Clinton, let's say they're worth $300 million. But the world of pain here is going to be measured in the many billions of dollars. And they don't have that kind of money to make people whole, whereas Bill Gates does, and George Soros does, and a lot of very rich people do. And there will come a point where those rich people look at this and say, if I cut off my left arm, I can still live for a while. But if I, strap myself up to the hand grenade and the time bomb that the Clintons seem to be, I'm out of here. And it'll come a moment, and it's really probably going to be where the lawyers to these rich people take them aside and say, look, stop listening to the Clintons. Stop listening to the Obamas. You are the person who's going to foot these bills. You don't want to go to jail. You need to change your whole approach here. You need to turn on the Clintons. You need to turn yourself in. You need to get a deal. And you need to get it as soon as possible, because the more time passes, the more the Trump administration may have leverage and decide they don't need you. They have a gigantic budget deficit to pay for. And one very easy way of paying for this, a portion of the budget deficit, is to go after all the smart people, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, all these private foundations. And I have found so far in the U.S. more than 50. You go after all these people who have hundreds of billions of dollars sitting in their foundations, who I believe willingly overlooked these obvious frauds. The case of the Gates Foundation sending more than 100 grants over a long period of time to these Clinton frauds, willingly overlooked this, in my view, because they felt it was a cheaper price to pay funding these Clinton things and then getting on the right side of Hillary Clinton. It was much cheaper. And it just, the viewpoint of the vast Gates empire, what's $100 million? What's $150 million? It's a peanut. Same for the Rockefellers. Same for a lot of these people who, frankly, have made their money in near-monopolistic ways, which, I'm an economic conservative. I don't like monopolies. I think that's a bad deal for everybody. And so, I think the tectonic plates under this scandal are shifting, much in the way that GE's shifted. Took a while. But when I, you know, started on GE and by August of 2017 in earnest, it took a couple of years to get the market focused on it. Today I would point out that the market is strongly up. It's about 1% up on the Dow. And GE is down 3% today in a market that's up 1%. So, yeah, you get away with this messing about for a while. And then suddenly everybody will say, you know, this Clinton, everybody knew the Clinton Foundation was a fraud. And those Obama people, they're not as smart as they think. You know, they just decided they'd get away with the same stuff, and they got caught, too.
What about the foundation world itself? In your view, is it acting or reacting in a way that suggests that they are concerned about their, for lack of a better term, their industry and the many examples that they're having now of people abusing both the concept of charity work and the actual deliverables and how they're going about it, corrupting it with politics and so forth? Is there any indication that the charity world is taking some cues from what we have been discussing now for a couple of years as a cue that they need to really get involved?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, the good people in the multiple, you know, the vast majority of American charities give up their time, which is the most precious thing, and get involved in charities that truly do improve the lives and benefit we, the taxpayers, by providing services to the public at large at a far cheaper expense than our government would do it. And they're thoughtful and they're impactful, et cetera. On the other hand, there are some sharpies, too many of them, who figured out that the way the rules are written, charities actually can be gamed. There's too many of them. The IRS, I would argue by design, has a very small department devoted to looking at them. Individual states, which are the primary overseers of charities in America, do not have the resources to really look after, in particular, American charities operating internationally like the Clintons and the Obamas. And so crooks look at this and say, all right, I live in a high-tax state. I've got state, and particularly now, I've got state taxes, local taxes, federal taxes, et cetera. If I'm Bill Gates, I got a whole boatload of Microsoft stock that cost me nothing and is now worth, pick a number, $100 billion or whatever the number is, I could plunk, you know, $20, $30, $40 billion into my foundation. And the way the laws work is that that foundation can continue to own the Microsoft stock, and Bill can control his foundation because it's a private foundation, not a public charity like the Clinton Foundation. And he gets this monstrous tax deduction for giving appreciated stock into a foundation that he still controls. So the question, has he even really given a gift? He still controls the foundation that received his shares. So, yeah, I mean, there are many ways to game the system. The real offenders, in my mind, and where once we get done with the Clinton Foundation, the Obama Foundation, I'm going to accentuate work I've already started on the Ivy League institutions, the endowed educational institutions. To me, you know, one of the things I loved about the ones I went to when I went to them from 74 to 80, they were places where that truly encouraged, in my view, and I was chairman of the Yale Conservative Party, and people knew that I was conservative back then. I was given every latitude to explore anything I wanted to explore in economics, political, in the departments I operated in. Professors encouraged free inquiry and debate. You weren't shouted off campus. They weren't as intolerant today. And so my belief is that these wealthy endowed universities, not simply the Harvards, Yales, the Ivy Leagues, but the ones with the 100 million and up endowments, have become places that no longer educate people and take you past the frontiers of current knowledge, but instead are indoctrinating students and, you know, and pressurizing people who do not agree with the social justice globalist way of thinking. And I think too many of these institutions have basically, I would argue, lost justification for the U.S. federal and state and local tax exemptions, which they currently enjoy. I mean, if what you're doing is indoctrinating people and also charging them tremendous amounts of money while your professors earn gigantic amounts of money, A, for teaching, and then B, in related for-profit ventures, is this an activity that should pay local real estate taxes, should be exempt from sales taxes and income taxes and other taxes? Is this truly educational, or are we indoctrinating America's youth and enriching the people who do it and creating vanity opportunities for the very wealthy to donate money to these nameplate schools and acquire, you know, respectability and notice for their, quotes, you know, selfless generosity? These are big questions. And actually, I'm beginning to see, I'm encouraged, because I've heard word back from Harvard that the new president was just installed, just in the process of formally being installed. I think his name is pronounced Bacow or Bacow, B-A-C-O-W. He's going to change things. I think these institutions are going to be forced to change things. I like to see the nameplate institutions actually studying things that are not simply stepping grounds for investment banking, consulting, and financial work. You know, I like to see some pure science research. I'd love to have an actual cure for cancer and other diseases come out of these universities. You know, I like to see people, it doesn't matter their gender or how they view themselves, I'd like to see more people in the hard sciences. I think our universities should be the envy of the world, not following, well behind the Indian Institutes of Technology and the Chinese universities that are making breakthrough after breakthrough in sciences. So, yeah, I think, and I bring this up just because it's the people in that world that, you know, write the bulk of the literature and give the speeches and have the imprimatur after their names that are able to shape the public debate. I think we're starting to see realization of that. There's actually a fine mind over in the UK who wrote a book a while ago. Her name is Lindsay McCoy, memory, and it's called There's No Such Thing as a Free Gift, I believe, exploring just, you know, how perverted elements of charity land have become. This is at the very highest level. You know, the gigantic charities are filling out massive grants to friends and others. And many of these massive charities are very politically connected, either on the right or the left. And, you know, it's high time to take a close look at this and ask ourselves, you know, are these entities gaming important laws that have not been appropriately amended and need to be amended? This should really be a bipartisan exercise.
I want to ask about the apparent, has it gone so slow, the Mueller investigation and into the Clinton Foundation? Has it ground to a standstill? Anything happening there?
Well, the Mueller investigation, I don't believe Mueller is investigating the Clinton Foundation, but, you know, I don't think we really know. Just recently, Sarah Carter, who is doing with John Solomon and others great work, has revealed moments ago that apparently within the FBI there were two sets of books and records on the Spygate inquiry, you know, one for the top people and another for the general public. And, you know, just as in my world, the investing world, you absolutely cannot keep two sets of books for a corporation. You cannot do that. I don't think that the FBI and the Department of Justice should do that. I don't think that our government should be involved flouting the Freedom of Information Act, which is the essential tool we use to try to bring people to heel in government and expose corruption. So, I think the short answer to your question, Utrecht, is that the Clinton Foundation frauds are so massive and implicate people in both parties that there has been uniparty interest in slowing them down. And you see this. I mean, President Trump gives a direct order. Issue the stuff relating to Carter Page, the FISA applications, and do it in an unredacted basis as soon as possible. And the swamp says, no.
don't think so.
Yeah.
We have to bring it to a close because we're out of time. But Charles, it's always it's classroom instruction listening to you decipher for us the foundation world. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Idris.
All right. And we'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.